Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. It's April 27th, 2020, live to be rebroadcast April 29th, 2020. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician, with my co-host Ron Meniza.
Hey.
If you'd like to participate in the conversation about natural medicine while live, you can comment below on Facebook Live, and you can also email me at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to the show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, and Spotify. You can also check out my Facebook page, Twitter, and Instagram at FranStorchND. The views expressed in this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. And my little public service announcement, just want to remind you to do the five. Wash your hands often. If you're going to cough or sneeze, cough into your elbow. Try not to touch your face. Stay at least 6 feet apart from people who aren't on your quarantine, and stay home as much as you can, all right?
Yeah.
And take your cytokine calmers like your ginger and your curcumin and resveratrol and licorice and stuff, and also nettles. All right. So let me see if there's anything that's latest that I know about. I'm digging through some information in terms of whether or not you should be taking vitamin A. Vitamin A seems to make sense to me, but in terms of the minutiae about how your immune system works, it may or may not be helpful. That's one of the things that I'm reading. Vitamin C as well. Vitamin C is, they're using IV vitamin C in some areas in order to help fight the coronavirus, and they're using it in hospitals in some cases because it does stimulate the activity of your white blood cells. And you have to find that sweet spot with a lot of these things because you don't want to overstimulate the immune system, because overstimulation of the immune system is a hard thing. Now, the other thing that's happening is they're finding that people randomly are getting blood clots, and they're finding people who are in their 40s, 50s, 60s, or 30s, 40s, 50s, and even younger sometimes, getting blood clots and sometimes even getting strokes. I have something of an issue with this because I think this is a very unusual complication, and yet people are getting it. And they're finding that these are people who don't have a history of cardiovascular disease and they don't know the mechanism. I can speculate that the mechanism may simply be it's another effect of the cytokine storm, that when you have a lot of immune compounds in your body, and when you have things that are increasing inflammation, it makes you what's called hypercoagulable. That is, it increases your ability to coagulate. And so it makes it more likely for you to get blood clots. And so they're finding blood clots in tough places. They're finding it in the great arteries of the brain. And they're also finding when they go to take the blood clots out, the body is making more blood clots even as it's happening, and they're happening in the veins as well as the arteries. So they're saying this is very unusual. So again, we don't know the mechanism exactly. It could be a cytokine storm, and it could be that some people are genetically predisposed to blood clots, and this attaches to their clotting mechanism. We're not sure. Because it's happening that way, I want to make sure that people are, in fact, consuming things that can thin your blood. And I'm not saying take aspirin. What I'm saying is consume fish and fish oil, or flaxseed and flaxseed oil. Make sure you're eating your fruits and vegetables. If you just eat fruits and vegetables, there's a lot of things in fruits and vegetables that thin your blood. Just phytochemicals and essential fatty acids and phytonutrients, things like magnesium, even vitamin C. A lot of normal natural compounds, everyday compounds in fruits and vegetables, help with anticoagulation. So you should be okay if you're doing that. Again, we don't know the mechanism of this, and I don't know what you could do about it. And it also, again, is a very, it's an unusual side effect. So I don't know how much this is going to affect people. And I have to remind you that most people, when they get the coronavirus, are not going to get serious illness. Some people who do catch it are going to get serious disease, and we don't know who those people are necessarily. We do know that if you're compromised already, if you have cardiovascular disease or diabetes or autoimmune conditions, you're more likely to have serious disease. And so the healthier you are, the less likely you are to have serious disease. And some people genetically are just going to get serious disease and we don't know who those people are. If you get sick and you have shortness of breath, you can go directly to the ER. That is a good idea. Go right away because you want to get, you want to start getting treated immediately. All right. So one of the things I wanted to focus today on is sleep. And sleep is a very important part of helping to prevent the coronavirus, believe it or not. When you sleep, there are things called inflammasomes in your cells, and they increase cytokines. And cytokines are those compounds that come from your white blood cells that increase inflammation and increase the activity of your immune system. And melatonin specifically does this. It calms your cytokines and it calms those inflammasomes. When you sleep regularly, you tend to make more melatonin and you get a healthier levels of melatonin. I'm going to just move this water bottle.
Oh, I moved it already.
Yeah, I'm going to put it over here.
Okay.
That looked kind of funny.
Yeah.
But now you know, you've heard it here, Fran drinks water.
Yes,
and Fran plans to drink water while doing the show. Mm-hmm. It's a good thing. Yeah. All right. So melatonin. So here's the thing with melatonin. If you are sleeping well right now, and you're sleeping a good amount of hours and you're waking up refreshed, I think it's okay to skip taking melatonin. If you find that you take melatonin and when you take it, you get really weird dreams. And then when you don't take melatonin, you don't get weird dreams. You're probably melatonin sufficient. If you take melatonin, you just don't feel well, like you wake up groggy or you have really weird dreams. Maybe you don't want to take it. However, if you take melatonin and you sleep well and feel good, it could be worth taking because, as I said, it does stimulate your immune system. It stimulates it in a way that is helpful to fight against this coronavirus. And the best way to get a good melatonin function is to sleep well. So getting to bed at a reasonable hour and sleeping a good amount of hours and waking up until you are when you're no longer tired is a good thing to do. Also, you know, it's a great thing to do if you're in a position where you're able to do this. If you can take a nap in the middle of the day, do that. It's a good thing, right? So getting rest and getting sleep is going to improve your melatonin function.
We've been sleeping a lot lately.
And we've been sleeping more than we used to. Well, you're not going to spin class. And, so you don't have to get up early regularly. And you teach a spin class on Wednesday mornings.
That's
and also, and well, you didn't, you weren't teaching on Monday mornings, but you usually teach on Wednesday mornings. So, a lot of times when we get up to WHUS, your eyes are drooping when I'm looking across at you because you have to get up at 4 a.m. and
right.
Now we just don't do that anymore.
No.
And so all that time we're spending sleeping, even if we stay up a little bit later to catch, the latest Trevor Noah or Seth Meyers or whoever we're watching. Tonight it'll be John Oliver because we don't have John Oliver live and so we have to watch it streaming. So anyway, tonight we'll catch John Oliver. But we've been getting more sleep and we are very fortunate in that we are sleeping well. Do you feel like you're sleeping well?
Oh, I'm sleeping really well.
Yeah.
Better than I have in years, I think.
Isn't that interesting? Well, because
yeah.
We're consistently getting good sleep every night. I think that's why.
Yeah.
So, let's talk about the stages of sleep. Let's just review that. So I looked this up because I wasn't sure about this. How many times you go through the sleep cycles per night? So I looked it up. You complete about 4 or 5 sleep cycles a night. Your stage 1 sleep, you're easily awakened. It's a light sleep. In your stage 2 sleep, your heart rate slows. And your breathing slows as well. And it's your preparation for your deep sleep, which is your stage 3 sleep. Stage 3 sleep is very important. This is the deep sleep that rebuilds your muscle, bone, and tissue, and your immune system. And you really need this for your health. And one of the things that we understand is that in stage 3 sleep, that your stage 3 sleep shortens, that period of time shortens as you get older. And then your 4th stage of sleep is your REM. Yes, like the band. REM stands for rapid eye movement. And during your REM sleep, you have an increased pulse and breathing, and then you dream. Now, you dream in all of your stages of sleep, but when you're in your REM sleep, you do more dreaming and your dreams tend to be more vivid because you're not as deeply asleep. And this is, whereas the stage three sleep is a detox for your body. That's where you rebuild your muscle, your bone, your tissue, and your immune system. Your REM sleep is a detox for your brain. So you have dreams where you work stuff out that's going on in your brain. You might remember your dreams more during REM sleep. And getting adequate REM sleep helps with memory and mood. You will feel more refreshed if you wake after REM sleep, even if it means your sleep time is shorter. And so that's interesting. So if you go through four stages of sleep in the night and then you wake up after your last REM stage in your four stages, if you then go back to sleep and then you wake up in stage one, you might not feel as refreshed as if you just let it go at that REM time. So this is interesting. When people don't get enough sleep, they don't necessarily get enough, they don't get enough dream time. And their REM, if you get sleep and your REM time is cut off, it makes it harder for you to dream and harder for you to have dreams that are effective for your brain. So, I don't know if this is true now, but a lot of Americans are chronically sleep deprived, depending on how they have their lifestyle set up. So when you're chronically sleep deprived, you can't dream. And dreaming is important for your health. There's even a culture, I'm not sure where it is, if it's a Pacific Island or in Africa, where they believe that the important living that happens is in your dreams. And they're only awake 8 hours a day and they sleep 16 hours a day because they think all the important stuff happens in your dreams. Dreams are really important. They really are, like I said, they're detoxifying for your brain. They help with your memory. They help you to sort out things that are upsetting you. And they help you solidify things that are going on in your life. Dreams are inspirational. And I don't just mean that in a metaphorical sense, that REM sleep is really important to your health. So making sure you go through all of those four stages of sleep is very important. So how do you get through those nice four stages of sleep? You have to have your sleep hygiene. So I wanted to talk about sleep hygiene. I've talked about this before, but I think right now, sleep is an issue right now. And it's an issue for a lot of people because some people are having trouble sleeping. So we want to talk about that too. So first of all, with the sleep hygiene, make sure your room is the right temperature, not too hot or too cold. This can be an issue. If it's too cold, you won't be able to sleep. And if it's too hot, you won't be able to sleep. The other thing that happens if you sleep with someone else, it can be a challenge to get the temperature right when you have people who have different temperature needs. That's definitely something that happens. Hmm. And that's why they've come up with these beds now that have different temperature controls for the different sides of the bed. If you're fortunate enough to be able to get one of those, that can be really helpful. But right now we're kind of stuck with, so in our household, you know, I need to sleep a little bit cooler than Ron because I'm a postmenopausal woman and I get the occasional hot flash. But I haven't been getting as many hot flashes lately, I don't think. But I do need to sleep a little cooler than he does because I'm a bigger person than he is. And I, as I said, I'm a postmenopausal woman and I do still get hot at night sometimes. So one of the things we've done is we've set up a ceiling fan and that's helpful, although that will make him colder. So he needs more blankets and I need less blankets. But this is a real thing. If you don't want to sleep in separate beds, you have to figure out how you can make it comfortable for both partners. I think the ideal thing is to get one of those beds that has temperature controls for either side of the bed.
I think it's crazy, but that's all right.
It's not crazy. I mean, it's a good idea.
It's a good idea if you can afford it.
Right. It's a good idea. But that's another solution to that is what we did is we got a ceiling fan. Mm-hmm. And then with the ceiling fan, I can use more blankets if I have a ceiling fan. And then you just do the same. And then we're all right, and you wear more clothes, and that's how we handle it. But that temperature is really important. In general, people should sleep a little on the cool side. Most people can't sleep if the room is too hot. And even though Ron can he can handle temperatures that are higher than I can handle, if the room was too hot, neither of us would be able to sleep. You think that's accurate?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right. Turn off screens 30 to 60 minutes before bed and turn to relaxing activities like light reading, meditation, music. things that are calming. And it's not a good idea to have the last thing you watched be NCIS LA, where they extract somebody from Afghanistan. So it's really not a good idea. I mean, I think we're doing all right, regardless of what we watch, but not everybody's going to do that. If you're having trouble sleeping, it's a good idea to actively, engage in calming activities the last hour or so before you go to sleep. Then you want to make sure the room is nice and dark. No green or blue lights. Our eyes are, we see the frequencies of green and blue most easily. And so anything, so if you have green or blue light, that's going to tend to make you, can tend to keep you up. No light at all, if that's possible. If you sleep next to a window, that's where the light comes in, where you can see the moonlight. If you have a screen or a curtain, that's a good idea to use that. If that's not practical, if you, for whatever reason, like you just live somewhere, maybe you live in a city or in a town where you're next to the street light and you can't get the light all the way out, then it might be a good idea to use a sleep mask. Just, you know, one of those black masks that go over your eyes. And, you know, because having darkness really helps with sleep. Some people need a nightlight because they have to get up to go to the bathroom. They want to be able to see it. And one of the things you can do is, if you need a nightlight, get one that's activated, that's motion activated. So it's off when you're not near it. But if you're on the way to the bathroom, then it turns on. So, people sometimes are comforted by nightlights because some people are scared of the dark. And if you're scared of the dark, then you have to deal with that. But darkness really does help with sleep. I find that if I'm sitting in a dark room, if I'm in a conference or if I'm in a class and the room is dark and a little on the warm side, or even a little on the cold, it doesn't matter. If I'm sitting still and the room's a little bit dark, I'm going to be nodding off.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I can see that.
Yeah. And it's just because darkness tells my brain, okay, you can rest now. You can go to sleep. And the other side of that is I find that if I want to be active, like if I want to be active in the evening, I'm the one who's going around the house turning all the lights on. I have stuff to do.
You are.
Yeah. Well, I'm comforted by the light. And I'm also, if it's too dark, it depresses my mood. And it makes it so I don't want to be active, you know, because my brain goes, it's dark, go sleep.
Right.
So it does. So so if you want to go to sleep, you want to turn off the lights. You want to have it be dark. Now, devices. Some people need to have no devices plugged in at all. If you can put your devices on a surge protector, you can turn it off. The other thing is, don't eat too much too close to bedtime. Eating too close to bedtime can give you indigestion or prevent sleep. If you have reflux, if you have a problem with gastroesophageal reflux, that can make it harder for you to sleep. Obviously, if you have indigestion, you're not going to sleep as well. Then caffeine can prevent sleep completely in some people and others if it's too late in the day. So stop before like 3 p.m. Now, 3 p.m. is a guideline. So people come in and they're like, I can't sleep. Okay. And so one of the things I ask them is, what's your caffeine usage like? Well, I just have one cup in the morning. And I'm like, okay, you're telling me you can't sleep and you're ingesting a compound that's designed to prevent sleep. Why are you doing that? And the reason people do it is because people think of coffee and tea as beverages. They don't think of them as drugs. And I'm here to tell you that caffeine is a drug. Even if you enjoy it, even if you love it, it is a drug. It's got, caffeine is a phosphodiesterase inhibitor. So that means that it stops the breakdown of catecholamines. Catecholamines are the neurotransmitters that enhance your fight or flight, that make it so you get active and do things. So your epinephrine and your norepinephrine and your dopamine are all kept around longer by caffeine. And if you're a caffeine lightweight like me and you're having trouble sleeping, then trying no caffeine, at least for a couple of days, is a good idea. And people don't think of it that way because they're very attached to their coffee and tea. One of the reasons I have to say, I know you like the way it tastes, but part of the reason you like the way it tastes is because it gets you a little bit high. And it's fine. I don't have any problem with that. In fact, if you consume caffeine and you're happy and healthy and you sleep well, no problem with that. But if you're coming into me and you're saying to me, Fran, I can't sleep, I'm like, okay, What stimulants are you ingesting? Oh, well, I take Adderall and caffeine, and I have 3 cups of coffee a day. And I'm like, okay, so how do you expect to sleep if that's going on? You really have to be logical and realize that there are things that you're doing that can prevent sleep. So obviously people sometimes can't go cold turkey or can't go abruptly off caffeine. So if that's you, then I would suggest to them, then gradually go off your caffeine. One way to do it is something that I learned from Anne Louise Gittleman a long time ago. And that's if you are drinking, say you're drinking 3 cups of coffee a day, reduce your caffeine consumption by half a cup per week. So if you're drinking 3 cups of coffee, start today and drink 2.5 cups and do that for a week. And then next week, start with 2 cups. And the week after that, 1.5 cups until you're down to none. And you might find that your sleep gradually improves because you're ingesting less caffeine, if the caffeine is preventing your sleep. Again, if you're not having if you drink 3 cups of coffee a day and you have no trouble sleeping, you're probably a fast metabolizer. You're CYP1A2, 1F1F, which is the SNP, the single nucleotide polymorphism that causes you to be able to do that. Most people can't do that, but some people can. And if that's you and you can sleep, then, you know, maybe you don't need the sleep hygiene lecture because you're sleeping good, but it's no problem. And coffee, if you're drinking organic coffee, and tea as well, both have a lot of really helpful compounds in them. So if you don't have a problem with sleep and you're consuming organic caffeine without junking it, it's good for you. It's actually good for you. It has stuff in it. That coffee, largely, it has a lot of antioxidant compounds and it's cleansing for the liver. And tea as well. Tea has caffeine in it and also has a lot of antioxidants, has anti-cancer compounds in it, like EGCG, and it also has theanine in it, which is actually calming. So, you know, if you can sleep well, then have at it. It's okay. But if you aren't sleeping well, then you have to look at your caffeine consumption. Nicotine. So if you smoke, you may have trouble sleeping because you'll awake after 3 or 4 hours, because you're going through nicotine withdrawal. I never thought of that, and that people wake up and they kind of need the cigarette to help them to sleep. So if that's you, unfortunately, it's better not to smoke. It's especially better not a good idea to smoke in the time of coronavirus because you're damaging your lungs. So working on quitting smoking is a good idea. But, if you can't sleep, then working on quitting smoking by using nicotine in other forms might be a good idea. But this is a good time to quit smoking. I mean, obviously, it's a very stressful time. So quitting any habits or addictions is very difficult right now. But, actually smoking, if you're smoking anything, it's probably a good idea to not ingest the drug through smoking, ingest the drug some other way. So if you are smoking cigarettes, it's a good time to think about patches and gum and other forms of nicotine. Also cannabis. If you're smoking cannabis, it's a good idea to look at edibles and oils, sublingual oils and even vaporizers that use steam for you to inhale the cannabis and not inhale burning product. It's the burning that's going to cause free radical damage to your lungs, and you want your lungs to be in excellent shape right now. Okay, so alcohol. Alcohol will affect your sleep. Obviously, alcohol can calm you down in the short term and can help you to sleep in the short term, but in the long term, it affects sleep. And the reason is it uses B vitamins in its metabolism. It uses a lot of B vitamins in its metabolism. In fact, people who are alcoholics will get neurological conditions that are because of their low levels of B vitamins. And so you need B vitamins to run your neurotransmitters that help you with sleep, especially serotonin. Serotonin uses B6 to help you with sleep. Over-consuming alcohol is something that's going to mess up your sleep. And a lot of people, unfortunately, at this time, alcohol is something people are indulging in. And so that's something to be careful of. And I don't like to say to people, stop drinking altogether right now, because for people, a lot of people, it's comforting. But if you can really enjoy your alcohol, whatever your beverage is, whether you're drinking wine, and if you're going to drink red wine, I think that's the way to go. Drinking it every day might not be the best idea because it does increase level. It will, you'll chew through your B vitamins, and also it will mess with your hormones. And that's another thing that I read recently that's interesting. It'll mess with your hormones, and you want to have good hormonal function. But resveratrol is something that calms cytokines, and that is in red wine. So I think the optimal thing is, if you are a drinker and you don't want to stop drinking, is to enjoy a glass of red wine every other day. That's going to be your best bet. If you like wine, if that's not what you like, if you like some other kind of beverage, then go. If you want to get your resveratrol, but you don't like wine, maybe have a little grape juice or eat grapes. You can get grapes at the store right now and get your resveratrol that way. And then if you want to have a beverage, an adult beverage, enjoy one every other day, and then just eat really healthy around that. Get your exercise and do other things to mitigate the effects of whatever the alcohol is going to do to you. So if you eat foods with a lot of B vitamins, like beans and whole grains and healthy animal protein, then you're going to be able to, you might be able to upregulate your B vitamins. You can even take B vitamins and supplements if you're doing them. That might not be a bad idea. Just if you are having trouble getting off your wine or your alcohol, it might be a good idea to just take a B complex at this time, and so that you upregulate your levels of Bs and you'll metabolize your alcohol a bit better. All right. More sleep stuff. Some antidepressants block REM sleep. So melatonin, as I told you, helps you to have a normal sleep-wake cycle. So I want to go back to antidepressants. You're taking an antidepressant, they can block your REM sleep. And the REM sleep, as I said, it's a brain detox. So even if you need your antidepressants, then take your antidepressants. If you're going to be happier and healthier taking an antidepressant, I would say probably the ones that are going to block your REM sleep are going to be the selective serotonin, anything that interacts with serotonin. So your SSRIs, like your sertraline and your Celexa and your Lexapro, those all might block your REM sleep because of how they interact with serotonin. If you need them, you need them. That's just how it is. And if you're sleeping okay, don't worry about it. But just know that if you're taking an antidepressant, that can affect your sleep. So we talked about melatonin, and as we said, it helps you to have a helpful sleep-wake cycle, and you produce healthy amounts of it when you get adequate sleep. Supports your immune system and calms your inflammatory compounds that cause the cytokine storm and the coronavirus. So as I said, if you can take melatonin and you feel good when you wake up, then take the melatonin. What's your dose going to be? What I tend to recommend is starting out with a one, in a way that you can figure out a dose that works for you, because melatonin is one of those things that people are going to feel good at varying doses. So I like to tell people to get either 1 milligram pills or get liquid that has a calibrated dropper, and then you can figure out your dose. You can start by taking a milligram when you go to sleep and see if that works for you. And if it works, great, then you're done. But then you can very gradually increase your dose in drop doses, and you can get a very precise dose. Maybe your dose will be 2.5 milligrams. And you can do that when you have a liquid with a calibrated dropper. So that's a great thing to figure out. And again, if you take melatonin and you get weird dreams that you don't like, or you take melatonin and you wake up groggy, either you took too much or your melatonin's sufficient and you shouldn't use it. And you know, don't worry about it. There's other things you can take to calm cytokine storms. All right. So other things that can help with sleep. There's a nice neurotransmitter called GABA. Remember I Want to Be Sedated, that band.
The
Ramones.
The Ramones. Yeah.
They used to say Gabba Gabba Hey.
Gabba Gabba
Hey. Yeah, anyway, but that had two B's in it. This has one B. GABA stands for gamma aminobutyric acid, and it's an inhibitory neurotransmitter, and it's in a cycle with neurotransmitters that hype you up. Like dopamine, it's in a feedback loop with dopamine and also acetylcholine, which are neurotransmitters that are energizing. And so if your GABA function is down, you won't sleep as well. And in fact, you can take GABA, and GABA may calm you down. Now, GABA is understood. You take plain GABA. If the bottle says just GABA on it and you take it, it may or may not work for you because it doesn't cross the blood-brain barrier well. So it will tend to calm your body. But sometimes if you take something that calms your body, that will relax you enough so that you'll be able to go to sleep. It makes you feel pleasantly calm, and so you're relaxed. But if you take PharmaGABA, it's been enhanced so it can get into your brain. And PharmaGABA works nicely. It's a nice, harmless neurotransmitter, you know, very low side effect profile. My patients take it. They like it. It seems to be really helpful. I love theanine. Theanine is a great alkaloid that comes from tea and green tea. There's more caffeine in black tea, but there's also more theanine. But there's, when you drink green tea also has theanine in it, and it also has nice amounts of EGCG, which is epigallocatechin-gallate, nice stuff, which is a great antioxidant and cytokine calmer. So theanine is lovely and calming. You can get theanine in pills, and I have theanine in gummies. And I think they're fun because it's a gummy. And the gummy I have doesn't have sugar in it, which is very nice. It's sweetened with xylitol or some other alternative healthy sweetener. And the only thing with gummies is gummies tend to be more expensive than not gummies. So for the same price, I can get twice as much theanine as I can in the gummy. But if you like gummies and the gummies make you want to take the product more than if it was a pill, then by all means get the gummy. As long as you can get a dose that you're looking for in the gummy. So theanine gummies can be very nice. I also found theanine melts. That's nice. So one of the companies makes a theanine melt. And again, when you make a melt is already going to be more expensive because you have to make the melt. You have to put all the stuff that goes into the melt. You have to make the pill big enough so you can put it under your tongue. And then you have to flavor it and you have to put a little sweetener in it. If that's a way that you're going to enjoy taking it, it's great. There's this company that makes these theanine melts. You put them under your tongue, and there might be a quicker uptake because when you put something under your tongue, you have a lot of blood vessels under your tongue where the alkaloids can be absorbed directly underneath your tongue. So I'm looking at my Facebook Live, and I want to say hello to the people who are on. Looks like Ron is on. Hi, Ron.
Right.
Looks like Matt Hannon was listening.
Yeah.
And Mara from high school is listening. That's so beautiful that my friend Mara from high school is listening. See, it says Mara. Mara.
And
she still lives in East Windsor, I think. And then we have Tom. Tom is listening. And you. Right.
Yeah.
So it was very nice.
I actually wrote something back to Tom because he used to listen to your show all the time.
Aww.
And didn't realize you were still doing it.
I'm still doing it.
Yeah, I gave him all the appropriate information.
Yeah. Now you can listen anytime. And if you can figure out a way to listen in your car to podcasts, because I've got that going on. I can listen to podcasts in my car.
Right.
You can listen to us. We're on Spotify. So
Matt
just
says he's still at work.
Yeah. All right. Okay.
Still at
work. All right. So here's some more stuff that can help you sleep. Lemon balm is this lovely herb, and lemon balm is a mint, and it tastes like lemon. Doesn't taste like, you know, mint. Doesn't taste like peppermint. I don't think it has mint. If it has menthol, it doesn't have a lot of menthol in it, but it has, you know, citrus compounds in it. So it tastes lemony. It's really lovely. It's a very mild compound. The neat thing about lemon balm is that, it is calming. It's a lovely calming herb. It's also antiviral, and it may have some benefit in fighting coronavirus. So one way I like to take lemon balm, makes a lovely tea. You can certainly have it in tea. You can take it in tinctures and alcohol, but I think it makes a lovely glycerite. So if you can find lemon balm glycerite, thing is, you're not going to get as much compound in lemon balm glycerite. But if you take enough of it, it will also be calming. And again, it's in a form that you're more likely to take because it tastes good. I think I have some lemon balm glycerite in the house. I've been meaning to pull it down. I just keep forgetting. And then there's passion flower. Passion flower is very nice. Passion flower tastes okay. But, you know, you can get it in tincture form. Anytime you get something in a tincture that is extracted in alcohol, a good thing to do is to put it in water so you're not taking the alcohol straight, because it's often in a high dose of alcohol. And so you don't want that alcohol touching the surfaces of your mouth. So you just drop the compound in a little bit of water. You want to burn off the alcohol because you don't want to be ingesting alcohol. Then you simply you can drop the tincture into warm water, and then the alcohol will evaporate.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. So why would you do, if you were bothered by alcohol, why would you do a tincture? Well, the reason is that alcohol is probably the best natural solvent there is. In fact, sometimes what they'll do is they want to make a glyceride. They'll extract the compounds in alcohol, then burn off the alcohol. Now they have the compounds, and they'll put it into a glyceride so it's concentrated. Because you can extract compounds in glycerin directly. It's just glycerin is not as good a solvent as alcohol. Alcohol is an excellent solvent. Valerian. Now, valerian is stanky, unfortunately. It doesn't taste that great, but for some people, it works really well. For some, valerian is one of those things that for some people, it really doesn't work at all. Now, valerian is, it can have a paradoxical effect where it revs you up. But for a lot of people, it just works nicely. Some people, it works to help them sleep, but it makes them groggy. Some people, it just works, and it's very nice. So, and you're not going to get side effects like you're going to get with sleeping pills, with your Zolpidem and your Trazodone and your other drugs like that. Skullcap is also Scutellaria. Skullcap is a lovely herb that also can help you to sleep, and it can be mixed with these other things. Oat straw is another one. Hops. You know, you think of hops as being part of beer. But when you extract hops in a tincture, hops is something that can help you sleep. And didn't you say we have a hops farm down the street now?
Yeah, we have one that is in the making. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Down
it's the, kind of a thing. People are doing that
in
now.
Chaplin. People are growing hops.
Yeah.
So they can make more beer.
Yeah. Right. More beer.
Right.
More beer is good.
I guess.
For those who like
I'm
beer.
I'm not the big beer person, but all right. That's fine. Okay, so let's talk about, here's an interesting topic, why daylight savings time might be bad for you.
Oh.
Yeah. So I'm pulling from a story, a Science Alert story, and here's why it might be bad for you. So why do we even have it? It's often the butt of jokes. Why do we have it if it appears to be bad for our health? One idea for daylight savings time was presented in 1784 by Benjamin Franklin. He wrote an essay as a way to save. He said it's so you could save on candle wax because you know people have lights and they used candles.
Yeah,
yeah. It was first implemented in Europe and the U.S. during World War I, and the implementation of daylight savings time has across the last 100 years been supported by purported reductions in energy uses and increases in daily productivity. While in the U.S. it's taken a few different forms, in 1966 there was a Uniform Time Act and it cemented the current schedule of 6 months of standard time and 6 months of daylight savings time, although that's not what we're doing now. Other arguments in favor of daylight savings time is that it allows more people more time to enjoy leisure activities during the summer months, and it leads to an increase in physical activity. But all of that remains controversial. A 2014 study did not find any difference in activity patterns between people living in Colorado, Utah, and New Mexico, and residents of Arizona, a state which does not observe daylight savings time.
That's right.
Arizona has Arizona time.
Right.
Except on the reses, where they do. Yes, on the reservations, they do observe daylight savings time.
They do?
Yeah, the Hopi and the Navajo, because Hopi and Navajo reservation is a big deal in Arizona.
Yeah.
And they do not there, but the rest of Arizona does. Because you, when you're crossing into Nevada, when you pass some, what is it? It's the Hoover Dam when you're crossing
From Las Vegas and into
from
Arizona.
Nevada, yeah. Between Nevada and Arizona,
right.
Is the Hoover Dam. And there's a, on the Arizona side, it says Arizona time. And then on the, Nevada time, Nevada side, it says Pacific time.
Right.
And sometimes they're different, sometimes they're the same. Depends on what month it is. So right now, we're 3 hours apart. It's only during standard time. And I remember this because I have friends in Arizona. So it depends. What time is it for you, Stephanie? I don't know. So studies on energy usage also have mixed results. One showed moderate savings in energy spending in Norway and Sweden, while another showed an increase in energy spending in Indiana. So Norway and Sweden, they would you would see a reduction up there because they're so far north,
further north,
that yep. their days are really long in the summer. They're up around the 50th parallel. So they're not at the Arctic Circle, but they're way, I think they're north of the 50th parallel. So they have even longer summer days than we do. So if people are out more, they're not going to turn the lights on as much. You're going to have some energy reductions. The further north you get, you'd expect to see more energy reductions during the summer because it's light later.
Right.
When you're down Florida, I noticed that when I'm in Florida, if I'm in Florida in May, the sun doesn't set as late down there. Although it's hard to say because my mother's so far west.
Yeah, your mom's on the west coast.
Yeah, so, she's even, yeah. And if you drew a straight line from my mother's house up north, you'd be in Ohio.
Correct.
And so Ohio, the sun is going to set later. No, right? It sets earlier in Ohio, like in real time. It's just in real time, not regardless of what time it is. Our sunset's going to happen before Ohio, no, always, right? Okay. And then, and my mother, she's down south, and their day length is more even all year round, you know, that they, right. the sun doesn't set as early as it does here in the winter, and it doesn't set as late down there. As it does up here in the summer.
Through the summer, yeah.
Yeah.
In the winter,
So the other thing, there's work and play and our activities, but it also matters that our bodies run on a natural 24-hour cycle. Most people, the vast majority of people, have a 24-hour physical cycle. We have time zones so that we can keep timing consistent around the world. We have a system on our body that keeps our physiological timing in check. And the master clock is that controls your experience of time is your hypothalamus. And it's in your hypothalamus. It's called the suprachiasmatic nucleus, the SCN. Okay, in the suprachiasmatic nucleus, it helps to sync time throughout your body with hormonal and chemical signals. And one of those chemical signals is melatonin, and another is serotonin. Our internal clocks regulate many body processes that we know are important for health, like our sleep-wake cycles, and also regulate the physiology of our body in several ways, from our liver function to our immune system. And if you look at Chinese medicine, there's a thing called the Chinese clock. So this is something you can look up. Just look up Chinese clock, and you will see that in Chinese medicine, they figured out which organs dominate activity throughout the day. And liver time is in the middle of the night. It's while you're sleeping. So if you don't get adequate sleep or you don't sleep well, you can't do detoxification and rebuilding. And you know how we talked about in your stage D sleep, you do a lot of physical repair and, you know, you do protein synthesis and you do rebuilding of muscles and things like that. Well, your liver is very active in that. And if you don't get good sleep, your liver can't do what it's supposed to do. So if you look at the Chinese clock, you'll find that liver time is somewhere... It's somewhere late at night, like, you know, somewhere between 1 and 4 in the morning. I forget what the exact time is, but it's while you're sleeping. It's supposed to be anyway. So if your body clock is disrupted, they can be disrupted by the really rough diseases like cancer, diabetes, neurodegenerative disorders like Alzheimer's disease, psychiatric disorders, and heart disease can all affect your body clock. And so what sets the time for the SCN, for this special nucleus? There's a lot of environmental cues that keep us on time. Temperature, food, socialization. One of the most important ones is light. Huh. So the SCN receives input from specialized cells in the retina that relay light as a signal that the SCN can communicate to the rest of the body. So light disruption can have catastrophic effects on the functionality of our biological clock. So, you know, when you go camping and you're basically sleeping when it's dark and you're awake when it's light, that's really how it's supposed to be. Problem is that we force ourselves to do activities on into the night and we turn, you know, like me turning all the lights on to make me more active. It's really not a good thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Although, so, you know, I do end up turning all the lights off after you're fast asleep.
Yeah.
Because you, even though you have all the lights on, you
sometimes that lately it's been you that's falling asleep, and I'll go in the other room and shut off the lights. And, yeah.
Yeah.
So, anyway, light disruption can really affect your biological clock. And we're gaining insight into the importance of keeping a healthy biological clock as a way to prevent, slow down, and even treat disease. And it's becoming clear that daylight savings time is actually harmful to our health.
Wow.
Yeah. While the body clock gradually adjusts in response to light changes as the earth rotates and the seasons change, the sudden change of time that comes with the beginning and end of daylight savings time can have substantial impacts on our body. So it's because we have this artificial thing going on where we measure time on a clock. And if we change the time but really didn't change what we did at those times, it will matter. You know, it's right. Like, you know, if you were retired, you didn't have to be anywhere at a particular time. You just have a life where you don't have to be anywhere at a particular time. You change the clocks. You just sleep when you were sleeping anyway. It wouldn't matter. And you would just watch your favorite TV shows at different times. Or, again, that wouldn't even matter if you had streaming TV. Who cares anymore? But it becomes important when your 5:45 spin class, your body thinks it's 5:45, and now we turn the clocks back. What is it, spring ahead, fall behind?
Fall behind.
Yeah, so we turn the clock backward, and now 5:45 is, what, 4:45?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like that. I don't know. The harder one is it's the spring one.
The spring transition is probably the most difficult one. Because you lose an hour of sleep.
Right.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, your 4 o'clock wake up to go teach your class at 4 o'clock or 4:15 in the morning is now 3:15.
Right, exactly.
Ouch. Yeah.
Exactly. So instead of having this gradual, because the sun's rise and set changes by 1 to 2 minutes a day at the steepest part of the curve, you know, that day length goes in a normal curve and it starts to level out. We're in a leveling out place right now because it's April and we are less than a month and a half from the solstice. So the curve, the normal curve of day length, the days are continuing to get longer, but the curve is starting to level out. And when you get into May, even though the days are getting longer, you're not in this mad dash towards light like you are earlier. March, I would say March and April, the curve is pretty steep, and then May starts to level off a little bit, and then, of course, you get the solstice. And it stays pretty steady in late May. Up to the solstice, and then it's pretty steady, and then it starts to drop, and you don't start to feel it dropping extensively. You don't start to feel it dropping extensively until like October and November. That's when you're like, oh, the days are getting shorter, and I can feel it. Yuck! And then all of a sudden, savings time or your standard time comes back. So, so what you're doing is it's because of what we do at particular times of day. Suddenly, you're changing the light level and your body clock level a whole hour when we were changing minute by minute before that.
Well, it's like people who fly, you know, back and forth across the country, they're constantly changing their clocks.
That's right.
And that's really confusing to the body too.
There's a study that shows that that people can't ever really adjust to daylight savings time and that interferes with our natural adaptation to the changing seasons. And these acute effects permeate society at both economic and physical costs to people who inhabit places that use daylight savings time. And the chronic health effects speak to a larger issue, which is that disrupting the body's natural rhythm negatively affects our health. That's shocking.
Yeah. Who would have guessed?
Our body uses a lot of signals to keep on time. And one of them is hormonal cycles. That's all of our hormones. That's our reproductive hormones. That's our melatonin. That's our neurotransmitters as well. These things are all affected by light, and when they're out of sync, they can have a lot of effects on our body's ability to process energy, and that's why you get jet lag.
Right.
And that's why jet lag can be difficult to recover from. There was a study that showed that daylight savings time, during daylight savings time, adolescents suffered from a large misalignment of their social and biological clocks, and that had an effect on sleep, mood, and behavior in the long term. So if you have a cranky teen, you could blame it on daylight savings time.
Well, you can blame it on a lot of things, but that would be one.
Well, and one of the things you have when you're a teenager is you have a child. First of all, it's a person who's a child, so their frontal lobe is not immediately developed. And then you have hormones that are going all over the place, that they have not regulated their hormones yet, so they're having big bursts of estrogen, progesterone, and testosterone, and that's affecting them as well. And then if you go throw in the fact that a lot of teenagers have to go to school way too early in the morning, and, you know, that a teen schedule, teen's body clock is actually shifted later than in adults. And we ask them to be in school for 7 in the morning, which means they have to get up at 5, 6 o'clock in the morning to catch the bus, right? And it's a mess. It's just not good for them. And then you throw daylight savings time into the mix, and then it's an even bigger mess. So should we stick to standard time throughout the year rather than have DST year-round? This comes down to the use of time zones. And when, while we may need them to function in a global society, even time zones cause some people to live on a different time than solar time, the time of day calculated from the sun's position in the sky. A particular time zone's clock time is set most closely to the eastern edge of the time zone's solar time. So even when you're on standard time, people on the western edge of that time zone can be misaligned about an hour from the local solar time. That's why, you know, it's, if you're standing at the same latitude, if you're standing in, you know, here in Connecticut, and you're at the same latitude in, I guess if you go across, you'd be in Massachusetts, then New York, Western New York. If you go out to Western New York, it's very different than being sitting here in Mansfield, that where the sun's relative position in the sky is different here. Well, and then you get into, say, you're in Ohio. You know, if you go due west, it's, if you looked at the sky, it looks very different here versus Ohio at any given time of the day, because the sun is in a different position, even though it's the same time of day. And so then all of a sudden in Ohio, you get far enough west in Ohio and into Indiana. That, and where does the time zone change? Somewhere in Michigan, I think.
Yeah, it's weird. Yeah.
So it's even been shown that cancer risk can increase depending on the east-west positioning in a time zone. While standard time is not a perfect system, it's our best option to support by this. The contention here is that we should really have just keep it at standard time. So there's negative health consequences to using daylight savings time, and there's not a lot of benefit. Changing to year-round standard time is a relatively simple but profoundly effective way to give people a chance to keep up on their biological clocks. So isn't that interesting? So the recommendation of this study is that daylight savings time is basically bad for you. I like having the late, I enjoy having, you know, once I adjust to it, I enjoy having the late summer days that the sun sets really late. I kind of enjoy that. So, and yet, you know, so the sun would set at 7:30 instead of 8:30 or 8 o'clock instead of 9 o'clock. I could live with that, you know. I mean, with it for most of the year. So, my thinking is that anything that improves your health is going to be a good thing. So if it means changing to standard time all year, then I think that's a good idea. So this is another job for melatonin. If you're really affected by the time change, then you can take melatonin. So melatonin can help you to sleep. And what you do, the way you take melatonin is you basically take melatonin about half an hour or so before you want to fall asleep. So you can take melatonin with you if you're changing time zones, if you're traveling and you're changing time zones. And again, you take a melatonin dose that you've worked out is the best dose for you, and you take it about half an hour from when you want to fall asleep. So if you are, if you're traveling to Europe or you're traveling out west, I usually don't have that much of a problem when I travel to, and travel to the west because it's only 3 hours. And of course, if I'm traveling to the west, I'm usually there for pleasure. I'm not working, so it's not that big a deal. It's much harder if you're traveling for work and then you have to be up at work hours and your schedule's all messed up. But if you're on vacation, it's not as big a deal. So here's a shout out to Heather. By the way, Matt wished you a happy birthday.
Oh.
And that you're falling asleep because you're old.
Oh.
That's it. Yeah.
There's no shortage of old jokes when Matt's
and Heather, shout out to Heather. She says that it wreaks havoc on her during the morning hours, daylight savings time does, And
I'm with Heather on that. I feel better.
And that she feels so much better when there's earlier light in the morning and it doesn't bother her so much in the evening. That's a really good point. I find it nice. And this time of year where the light is coming in, I mean, it's the sun, it's the twilight or the dawn is happening in the 4 o'clock, even the sunset is in the fives right now. You're starting to see light at 4 in the morning, and then you actually feel like getting up and doing something. Whereas in the winter, I'm really profoundly affected by light. And if it's dark, I don't want to do stuff. And I'm getting tired of having to work and, having to work and be on a schedule. That's getting to be a hard thing. So melatonin is one way to deal with that. And if you take your melatonin dose at a time of day that works for you. You take it at a dose that works for you, and you take it about half an hour before you want to go to sleep. It can help you if you're in a weird time zone situation or if you're trying to cope with daylight savings time. Maybe at some point they'll decide to do away with daylight savings time. I don't know. All right. So let's see. We have just a few more minutes, and I just want to remind you that it's a really good idea to eat well right now, to eat as well as you possibly can. One great thing to add to your diet is leafy greens, and getting organic leafy greens from the farmer's market is a really good idea. Farmer's markets are open. They are open with enhanced cleaning procedures. So this Saturday is it May already, this Saturday? Because the 20th, yeah, it'll be May 2nd on Saturday. So the store's farmer's market should be happening from 3 to 6 p.m. on Saturday in front of Town Hall, which would be a lovely thing with enhanced cleaning procedures. And there, you know, everybody will be masked up and you should be too. And they'll have ways to make it easier for you to pay and practice physical distancing. And they have you line up so that there's not too many people traversing the market at any one time. But it's a great way to get your leafy greens, and you're going to get really high quality organic greens there. So that's a good idea. I'm a big fan of anything green right now. If you're foraging, that's a great thing to do. You can look for dandelion greens and purslane and lamb's ears, and you know, things that you can forage. If any of you are lucky enough to find nettles, obviously if you're going to harvest nettles, use gloves because they will sting you. Once you put the nettles in water, in hot water, they will no longer have a sting, so you can eat them, and they're just really healthy for you. So please do eat your leafy greens, eat some fruit, eat some stuff with resveratrol in it, like organic grapes, or eat things with anthocyanins in it, like your berries, your raspberries, blueberries. Strawberries are in season. They're not in season here yet, but they're coming up from other places. They'll come from California, they'll come from Florida, and you'll be able to get them. Please do eat as healthfully as you possibly can. I'm going to go now, I think.
Getting there. Look at that.
Time.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna sign off. I'm going to do my little sign off.
And remember, this is going to be on the...
Yes, and if you want to listen to, I'll get to that.
You have been
listening to Radio Naturopath, the call-in talk show about health and natural medicine. I am France Dorch, MD, naturopathic physician, with my co-host, Ron Meniza. You can also email me with questions and comments at radionaturopath@gmail.com. Also, this Facebook Live will be posted on my Facebook page, which is at France Dorch, MD, France Dorch, MD, naturopathic physician and Radio Naturopath on Facebook. And you can continue to comment on it. If you'd like to listen to this show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, and Spotify. You can also leave questions or comments at my Facebook page, Twitter, and Instagram, at FranStorchMD. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of the station. Thank you for listening to Radio Naturopath, your show where you can learn about the best of science and nature. We'll be back next week with more Radio Naturopath on 91.7 FM, WHOS stores, whos.org, and at 10 o'clock a.m., on Monday mornings on Facebook Live.